Welcome to Equity Gurus, A Closer Look, where we give you, the investor, an inside view on some of the best and brightest small cap companies operating in the public markets today.
The opinions expressed on this podcast are not necessarily shared by people who are wrong.
Today I'm talking to Norton Singhavon, the CEO of GTEC Holdings, which trades under the symbol GTEC on the Canadian Venture Exchange. GTEC Holdings is a young cannabis company dedicated to growing ultra-premium quality cannabis in purpose-built indoor facilities. If they were selling booze, it would be Glenfiddich single malt scotch or Grey Goose vodka. GTEC has completed 3 cultivation facilities and is currently cultivating and selling cannabis. Today we're going to talk to Norton Singhavon about GTEC's strategy to bite off a chunk of Canada's premium cannabis market. Norton, welcome to Equity Gurus, A Closer Look.
Thanks for having me.
Norton, can you start off by giving us a bird's eye view of GTEC Holdings?
Yeah, so GTEC, our core competencies and focus, as you mentioned, is cultivating and distributing a premium indoor flower. What I would say what differentiates us is the fact that we're extremely dedicated to quality. Companies are focused on quantity, where quality seems to be our focus. And we're really following trends that have been successful in other mature markets like
yes.
Colorado, Nevada, and California, where the premium segment of the market seems to establish the most consumer loyalty and the least amount of price compression.
Well, let's talk a bit about this. What exactly does it mean to grow premium cannabis? I mean, how is that achieved? Through what growing techniques?
So I'd say it's a bit of a more of a complex answer, but from a very high level, there's a couple strategies or pillars that we implement. So first and foremost is we purpose-built our facilities from the ground up. With the exception of one acquisition that we made, the Alberta one, we bought an existing licensed facility. Everything else is either completely purpose-built from the ground up, meaning from empty dirt, or we take an existing building and retrofit it. So that's kind of number one. Number two is we implement some pretty advanced technology that actually brings in AI into the mix. So live, real-time, our facilities are able to monitor temperature, humidity, what the plant is feeling live real time, if the plant is intaking all of its fertilizers, if it's not, what the pH is, what the total dissolved solids is. So live real time, we can track all this. Currently, we're cultivating, I would say, a pretty generic and commercial strain. We do have about 26 different genetics that are coming in the near term. About 20 of them are non-existent in the Canadian LP world. And then also our process. So We don't spray anything. We don't use any pesticides. In fact, we don't have any pest problems. So most LPs have their pests they have to maintain it. They're maintaining it and they're living with it. We have zero pests, and hopefully we remain that way. And now we also talk about how we cultivate and harvest. So we whole plant, hang dry all of our product, and hand trim everything. This is really the only way that we're confident that we could deliver an end product to the consumer that truly is premium. On our trial harvest that we were actually planning to destroy simply because we want to obtain our sales license and not sell this product to the market at all. We then were convinced otherwise that based on the lab results, we should consider selling this. We sold the product to a company called Canmark,
yes.
an e-commerce medical platform out of 50 SKUs. We are their number. We were instantly their number one selling SKU, and to date, from last time I checked, we still are number one.
With the pests, Norton, would that be one of the advantages of, I'm assuming, of indoor growing, that it's easier to control that?
So if you take indoor growing versus the opposite end of the spectrum, which is outdoor, where you have no control, of course, indoor is going to be much better. And then you move into a greenhouse. And I would say greenhouse is more difficult to control because the rooms are going to be much larger. Your average greenhouse, I mean, the smallest ones I've seen are, 40, 50,000 square feet. Whereas compared to our individual rooms, we're averaging about 1,500 to 2,500 square feet per room. So we have some sort of contamination or compromise. We're able to isolate.
And with hand drying the cannabis, why is that important?
So whole plant hang dry to us, at least why that's important is that, first of all, a lot of these companies are focused on putting product outdoors. So they run everything through either a wet trimmer or a dry trimmer, which is an industrial tumbler type machine. It's going to strip away a lot of the trichomes on the plant, and potentially, if it's not dried properly, you may not maintain that terpene profile.
Yes.
So the best way to do it is to hang the whole plant upside down,
mm-hmm.
let it properly dry. Once it's properly dry, we then hand trim it. We don't implement any sort of speed drying where a lot of companies do.
How long does it take? How long does it take to dry?
On average, for us, we're probably close to a week.
Yeah.
Some companies are pushing it to a couple of days, and they're really losing the quality in their product. Now, for them, if it's going to extractions and they're talking about volume, I think that's not a bad idea, but that's not the market we're going after.
Will you guys be making oil?
Yeah, so we actually have a standard processing license.
Yes.
We're in the process right now of building out that extraction lab. We haven't decided what method of extraction we're going with, but we are leaning towards either ethanol,
yes,
or butane. And what we're going to do there is it's going to have the bandwidth and capacity to do about two times of our 2020 trim output. So it's going to be small. It's going to be a beta pilot project. We do have another application that's been submitted at a facility that we can build up to 9,000 square feet. So it's currently an empty warehouse, 4,500 square feet. We can go two stories on that, so 9,000. And that application is pushed pretty far through the process where Health Canada has said, let us know when you submit your evidence package. So that's going to sit there on standby. We don't want to go deploy, $4 to $5 million to build an extraction lab right now. We'd rather walk before we run.
Interesting. Now, you mentioned having the number one SKU on Canmart with a product that you were planning to destroy, which is pretty impressive. First of all, I would like you to explain to our listeners about the current restrictions in terms of marketing cannabis in Canada. And secondly, with those restrictions, how did you come to be the number one SKU? How do you push your product ahead of the field?
Yeah, so marketing restrictions are pretty limited. For those who aren't too aware, the packaging has to be very boring and mundane. You have to have the warning labels, and you're actually only allowed to have one color on your package.
I see, yeah.
But what I actually like about this, and this is something that I mentioned previously in other interviews, is that, you know what, this makes it a level playing field.
Right.
For somebody like Canopy that has more money than probably all the other companies put together, they're not at any sort of advantage that they can throw the marketing dollars at. They have to adhere to the same rules as a small producer like us. So now you have to have quality speak for itself. You can't have any fancy marketing. You can't have any fancy celebrity endorsements. So really, it comes down to product. In terms of how we became the number one selling product on Canmart, the best way to put it, I would say, is the product speaks for itself.
So I'm imagining with a product that you can't throw mega marketing dollars at, social media becomes important. Basically, what are people saying about your product?
Every day or every other day, somebody sends me some stuff on Twitter, usually. And there's people that are reviewing our product and talking about our product. And, for the most part, we're getting quite positive reviews. I haven't seen anything negative yet. To me, that's proving our thesis out that premium cannabis will sell itself.
Given the total tonnage of cannabis flower consumed in Canada, what percentage of it do you think is coming from the black market?
I don't have the answer to that question. If you were to ask me, and this is a little bit of a wider question/answer, is that, our thought right now is that the consumers that we are targeting more than likely aren't in the current LP framework.
Yeah.
They are the ones that have been purchasing on the gray and black markets from an online dispensary or illegal brick and mortar dispensary that has the product that they want. So I would say a good portion of the demographic we are targeting is not in the legal framework. Now, what portion of that is in comparison to the majority of the market? I kind of just use a very generalized 80-20 rule. So my thesis is that I think 20% of my consumers will be responsible for 80% of my sales, meaning that we're going after the loyal repeat consumer who, may spend a couple $100 a week or may spend less. But the key here is that, they are loyal to our product and we do not compromise quality.
So what I'm hearing is that you perceive the black market as an opportunity, not an obstacle.
No, because my intention is to convert as many black market consumers into purchasing our products as we humanly can possibly do.
What demographic are you targeting?
I would say males age, 19 to 35. They'd rather spend, at the retail location, maybe somewhere from $10 to $15 a gram.
Yeah.
Versus buying your biomass, pre-roll shake for a lot less. And don't get me wrong, there's a market for all that. There's a market for everything. We also have brands that will, target a completely different demographic. So one of our brands is called Cognoscente, and that's going to be a more refined palette for the aficionado that cares about terpene profile, not necessarily high THC, right? So our quote unquote black market brand that's targeting the black market will be high THC. Then we move on to our flagship medical brand, Green Tech, which I spoke about. Tenzo is what we call, a more generic brand, kind of catering to the masses, won't scare anybody off, kind of a good general clean, hopefully household brand that's well-known in cannabis across the country. And then we have FN Cannabis, which we are contemplating when and where to launch it. We do have a significant stakehold in Saskatchewan where we have a brick and mortar and an e-com retail license that's in, final stages of licensing. And we are partnered with the BATC First Nations tribe there.
Yes.
And we may be looking to launch that product specifically in the province of Saskatchewan, but that is yet to be determined.
You're listening to the Equity.Guru podcast.
Just a quick note to tell you, sorry to interrupt your interview, but if you want more of these, you need to go to your podcast player, whatever that podcast player is, and go and subscribe to the Equity Guru podcast. You can do that through iTunes, you can do it through Google Play, you can do it through all the places. Equity Guru Podcast. Do it now.
Welcome back.
What is your current cultivation profile? How many kilograms are you harvesting?
For a round number, currently we're ready to operate and we have fully built out 4,000 kg of capacity. I expect Grey Goose and Tumbleweed to get licensed pretty quickly here, especially with Health Canada's new announcement that you must be fully built out in order to submit an application. They've also promised a 30 to 60 day turnaround time from when your evidence package is assigned to a reviewer. And I think we're getting pretty close to that time frame on both those facilities.
So Alberta Craft Cannabis is running at full capacity.
Correct.
And just give me a little bit more information about Tumbleweed Farms.
Yeah, so Tumbleweed Farms is out in Chase, BC. We're in about 20 some odd acres there. That was purpose built from the ground up. There was nothing there but dirt. We didn't choose this location or choose this asset. We acquired it as a late stage applicant back in 2017.
I see.
We liked that it was still, kind of within our own backyard. I live in Kelowna, so Chase, BC is not too far.
Yeah,
we liked that it was, 8 kilometers south of the Trans-Canada Highway. So, we could get to Kamloops pretty quickly. We could transport product into Vancouver, Kamloops, or Alberta from that geographical location. And so we purpose-built that from the ground up, 10,000 square feet to start off. But we do have expansion capabilities there. And that may be the one that we're considering to certify organic. And then Grey Bruce is out in Kincardine, Ontario.
Yeah.
That one is 15,000 square feet. That one was also an acquisition as well. We're on about, 6 acres there. We're just down the street from Supreme, 7 acres. So the building was there. The infrastructure was there. We bought the land and building for pretty cheap. I think it was about, 400 and some odd thousand. We should be able to do about 1,600 to 1,700 kg a year out of there. And out of Tumbleweed, probably anywhere from 1,000 to 1,200.
And what about Green Tech Biopharmaceuticals?
So Green Tech Biopharmaceuticals is actually what started GTech. So we funded Green Tech Biopharmaceuticals internally. This was our internal application. So Green Tech right now, the exterior is complete. We're looking to build out the interior over the summer and probably a good chunk of the fall. If we can have plants in the door and cultivating by the end of the year, we're happy. This will be our flagship. We do intend to centralize packaging there. So all the other facilities eventually will be harvesting, drying, and shipping product in bulk wholesale format over to GreenTech Biopharmaceuticals, which we will then either send up to extraction or package for the consumer market.
Norton, how do you assess the risks to your cultivation targets? What could go wrong, and what can you meaningfully do to mitigate those risks?
So regulatory risk is, I would say, a pretty big risk in the early days, as in when are you going to get licensed, right? I thought we would have plants in the door already, but clearly, I guessed wrong. So there's a big risk in that if we're not licensed for a couple more months, then we're gonna lose out on revenue. We're not gonna hit our 2019 estimates. So that is one risk. And I would say the second risk is obviously just the same risk that any cultivator has. You may run a strain or a certain cultivar or genetic that does not yield well, and you learn it the hard way, or you run something that's extremely finicky to cultivate and it doesn't yield well. That's a large concern when you're trying to fine tune your genetics. Contamination, pest, crop loss, powdery mildew, all sorts of things that most cannabis companies that are cultivating have the risk of. But I think our team's done a phenomenal job mitigating this risk by how we build our facilities, right? We know that in BC, powdery mildew is a huge concern. Yeah. And we work with our HVAC consultants and mechanical engineers on the best ways to mitigate this. So far, we've never had any issues. And I remain confident, especially on the purpose-built ones, that I don't think we'll have any problems.
You mentioned earlier your lab and extraction facility. I'd like to know a little bit more about that. Where is it, and how does it fit into your vertical integration objective?
Zen Labs was built to serve as our own internal testing lab. The only other lab here in Kelowna is Valens, and they're our friends and we know them and we like them a lot, but I don't want to wait for somebody. If I want to test something, I want to test it now. And I want to have the capabilities to say, maybe we're not running our full test for Health Canada for sales. Maybe we want to see if we harvest the plant 2 days earlier, at nighttime versus daytime. What does the terpene profile look like? What does the cannabinoid profile look like? So we want to be able to do, some minor R&D internally, and we just want to internalize all that and not outsource it. We built this lab on a budget. It's not like your state-of-the-art, brand-new equipment. We bought all of our equipment used because we believe in walking before you run. We built a lab that is going to service ourselves, that's going to get the job done, and if we need to upgrade equipment as you go along, then we'll do that. What I'm really after is that the personal ACMPR or MMAR designated growers, or people that grow for themselves. And also what's going to be happening soon is the micro licenses that are coming. Now, that's kind of where we're going after in terms of our clientele for testing.
Interesting. Can you tell me a bit more about your retail strategy?
Yeah, so in BC, we previously announced an LOI for two former gray market dispensary locations in Vancouver. They were decent locations, but as part of the LOI, they had up until a certain time frame to get their license, and the LOI would expire. So they didn't get their license by the time, by the certain date. So we just respectfully walked away from the acquisition. And we had another one that we acquired, same kind of idea, but a different group. So we have a former gray area licensed City of Vancouver dispensary now in our portfolio. Currently, we're in the process of doing the renovations and submitting the provincial application. This is the one that we press released a while back. It's going to be called Cake Cannabis. And then just to give you and some of the readers some insight, I know we never disclosed exactly where it was, but it is actually on West 4th. In Vancouver, pretty close to the Tesla dealership. We love the location. We love the traffic. We love the visibility. And we think that's going to be our flagship store across Canada. So with all that said, we've assessed BC, and what we're doing is kind of giving out a secret here now, but we're looking at mom and pop businesses, flower shops, cell phone repair store, corner stores, laundromats that are for sale for maybe somewhere in the $100,000 to $300,000 range. So what we're doing is we're finding these businesses that are for sale. then we go to the landlords and say, hey, if we bought this business, would you be okay with us applying for a provincially licensed dispensary? If they say yes, then we make an offer to buy the business. If they say no, then we don't make an offer to buy the business. So that's kind of been our approach internally. I'd rather do that versus trying to pay $2-3 million to another third-party group. Again, we're not in a rush, right? Build versus buy.
Yeah, interesting. Norton, I just have a final question. This, you know, the cannabis industry is a frontier industry. It's so new, but if you look up into the future, into the sky, where do you see GTech in 5 years?
So it's funny, I get asked that question a lot. Hopefully in 5 years, I'm still here. So, sorry, I don't mean like I'm alive. I mean that I'm still standing here at the helm of GTech.
Yeah.
And the reason why I say this is because a lot of smaller LPs that we've spoken with, their dream and aspiration, and sometimes even on their deck, is they use Broken Coast, Afria, and Canna Farms as comparison. So I'm saying you're building a business in hopes that one of the big boys are going to buy you in the next year or two. I think that's a terrible business model. So yeah, we want to be, you know, we think we have what it takes to be, you know, let's say top three publicly traded licensed producers that have a focus on premium indoor flower.
Yeah.
And hopefully number one. You know, do I think we get to number one? I actually think we can. If we continue to execute, if we continue to dedicate ourselves to producing a quality product, it'll speak for itself. And eventually, based on our capacity, based on our cash flow, I think we could be a leading producer of premium indoor flower.
Build it, don't buy it.
Exactly.
Thank you so much for your time, Norton. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you.
That concludes another episode of Equity Gurus, A Closer Look. Thanks for listening. We'll see you soon.
Thanks for listening. For disclosure statements and more info, please visit www.equity.guru.